Hi guys, and welcome to the Basic Latina Podcast, an intimate conversation with friends about love, life, wellness, and everything in between. For today's episode, you'll hear me interview my friend Erika. Erika is a DACA recipient. She's considered a dreamer, and she'll be telling us a little bit about how her life was impacted when DACA came into place. Now, for those of you who don't know what DACA is a deferred action for children arrivals. It was a program that was enacted in 2012 when Obama was president, and it provides relief for immigrants from being deported and gives them the ability to work. And these are children who are brought to this country by their parents because their parents wanted a better life for them. Now, DACA has created opportunities for so many people. There are probably people who you work with currently who are able to work, be CEOs, managers, and do successful and amazing things in the U.S. because they're DACA recipients. But as you guys probably know, in September, the Trump administration announced that it was going to take away DACA. He felt like the fact that there are so many undocumented people here working was unconstitutional. With DACA being taken away, that means that the over 800,000 people who live in the U.S. that currently have DACA are at risk of being sent back to their country. And sometimes it's a country that they barely know. In Erika's case, she came from Mexico at the age of 4 and hasn't gone back because she can't go back because then she'll have trouble with getting back in. And although she has family there, imagine being ripped away from the family that you currently have here in the U.S. to go to a place and start all over again. So obviously, there's a lot of anxiety about DACA. In March, back a couple of months ago, the Congress said that they were going to make a decision about DACA in March 2018. And there's a lot of anxiety and stress about DACA because they haven't found an alternative and they don't know what they're going to do yet. So there are a lot of people wondering about what their future is going to look like. Also, there's another looming deadline in the horizon. Currently, people who have DACA are fine, but they might have an issue renewing their application because you have to renew your application every 2 years. But what Trump enacted back in September, he says that basically new people can't apply for DACA. So what they're saying now is that March 2020, that people who currently have DACA won't have it at all. So if you ever look this up, you'll see that there's a lot of conflicting information about what is gonna happen. So if you are currently a DACA recipient and you're listening to this, there is a lot of great resources online. So if I said anything that was inaccurate, I really apologize, but there is a lot of misinformation on the internet, and it's really misleading and confusing. So as someone who's not a DACA recipient, I really empathize with everyone who currently is, because to have to be uncertain about what your future is going to look like, and to have people who don't even know you be in charge of your future is, I can't even imagine that. So I want to thank Erika for her candor and for being so vulnerable with me and with all of us on the Basic Latina Podcast. I really, really hope that you guys enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Erika is a 28-year-old female. She was born in Aguascalientes, Mexico. She came to the U.S. at the age of 4 with her pregnant mother, and they arrived in Panoma, California. Her father later met them there where his older brother resided. They spent a few months in the West Coast before they relocated to Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford ended up being the place where the rest of her family would end up migrating when they came from Mexico. As a kid, Erika was placed in bilingual classes until she was in fourth grade. At the time, she felt really shy because her Spanish accent was different than anyone else's. And things started to get a little harder for her as she was inching towards the end of her senior year when Erika started to question her future. She had questions such as, you know, how would she get into college without any citizenship or residency? How would all the hard work that she had put previous years pay off if she couldn't continue her education? And this became a really emotional time for her and her family. And then DACA came into place. So thank you, Erika, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and I really appreciate you being vulnerable about your story, because I know this is not easy to talk about.
It's not. I always cry. Like,
So, going back to you.
Yeah, please.
How are you today, Erica?
I'm good. I'm good. Just
had some tacos. I'm so, oh, my God, stop. I'm so jealous you had tacos.
It's okay. No worries. I'll give you some after.
No, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. Can you elaborate a little bit about when you and your mom came to, you know, went to California? Do you remember much about that time in your life?
A little bit. I just remember me and her flying to California, and I wasn't sure why my dad wasn't coming with us. I just knew that we were meeting him there, so that made me feel better.
To this day, you still don't know why your dad didn't come with you guys?
No, I know why, but back then, I just was confused. Okay. I was just like, I don't know why he's not coming with us, because we always did everything together. But
right.
He'll be there when we get there, so his brother lived in California with his family. So we ended up, I think it was just a little bit easier for us to arrive there as opposed to coming straight to Connecticut where my mom's family was. So that's why we went there first. And then after that, we just...
Okay. So your mom's family was in Connecticut and your dad's family was in the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, your mom was pregnant with your brother?
My brothers.
Your brothers.
Yeah, twins.
Oh, yeah. I forgot they're twins. Yeah.
So we got here in April
mm-hmm.
of 1995, and then she had them in August of that year. So she,
They were born in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Harper Hospital.
Okay, mm-hmm. great. So how long do you think you spent? So you spent a little bit of time on the West Coast, and then you came to Connecticut.
Like 3 months. Yeah,
okay.
About 3 months. Yeah, it wasn't that long at all.
Okay.
But you know what I do remember is when Selena died, and I found out I was there. I remember
you were in California,
and I was like, oh my God. Like crying literally because she was like my idol.
Oh my God, we have to talk about that because I feel like Selena is a big idol for a lot of women who are Latina, but I don't know any women who are Mexican that can talk to about Selena and to see if like she's impacted Mexican culture as much as she has like pop culture.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't know, she was like my idol. Like I died to be her. Like the fact that she was Mexican too, you know, as a little girl, she's like, oh my God. She's where I'm from.
And she's like a Mexican woman that like didn't know a lot of Spanish and I feel like she can relate to a lot of people who probably are Mexican but they're like super American too.
You've seen the movie, so that's exactly what it feels like, I guess, when you don't know too much Spanish. But luckily I was able to know how to speak Spanish and have my parents that were teaching me like proper Spanish, so up until now I'm good when I'm at work, and I'm able to speak Spanish fluently and write it and all that good stuff. So
you speak both languages fluently?
Yeah.
Okay. Reading and writing for Spanish as well?
Both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And my sister had a similar experience as you when we migrated here. She was in a lot of bilingual classes, but she got held back a lot because she was having trouble. What was your experience like in school when you were in the bilingual classes and trying to move up? Were you a good student? Were you struggling?
Yeah, no, I always was a good student. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that my mom would actually make me do work when I was home.
Good.
So it wasn't just, like, homework. It would, like, she would have, like, books, like, for me to, like, practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. But it was scary because even though I was in a bilingual, like, class, I feel like most people were... They had a common denominator, the fact that they were from here. And I'm, like, in a new country, in a new school, in a new classroom, new people, and a whole new language that I was, like, lost.
Right.
So it felt weird. It was, like, it was scary. But then, thank God they had that, at least, because I don't know what I would have done if it was just straight English. And, you know, I would have probably freaked out. But I feel like it made me, like, so shy. My mom tried to get me to go to, like, summer camps.
Yeah.
But I'd be, like, call her, like, on the first day, like, come pick me up. Because I'm, like, you know, I'd be, like, scared to just be around other people just because, I don't know, I felt like I was, like, completely different. But after, in fourth grade was when I finally just switched over to all English classes. And it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
It probably just felt worse than what it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, I mean, I had no problems with school and...
You were going to school in Hartford at the time?
Yeah. I was went to school in Hartford up until my middle of my freshman year.
Oh.
I went to sports and then...
Oh, yes. That's where the connection is. Well, people that we know. Yeah. Okay.
And then after that, I transferred over to Cromwell, which was a whole other...
Yeah. Cromwell is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly, like... white Americans, and now again I'm like one of the very few like Spanish people, you know. So now it's like a whole another thing, but for some reason it's funny because I feel like I felt more proud than ever that I was different. Mm. When I was younger, it was like, oh my God, I just want to be the same as everyone.
Right.
But then when I was older, I was just like, oh my God, yes, I'm different. You know what I mean? It was just mm-hmm. something that I was just proud of. And ever since then, I feel like I'm just so proud to be Mexican.
That is one thing. I've only known you for like a year, yeah. a little over a year or mm-hmm. two. And it just bursts out of you. Like, I don't meet a lot of Latinas that they're so proud to be Mexican. Literally, your Instagram is Little Mexico. Yeah, not to put you out there. But it's like, it's amazing. Not a lot of people are proud, and I love that about you. Because as someone who isn't Mexican, there's always jokes within the Latino community about like, oh, she looks Mexican, or they're right. Mexican. There's all these, people are always poking fun of Mexicans.
Yeah, they are, right?
And I'm like, that's fucked up.
They are. It's funny when I'm around people and they say something about Mexican. I'm like, what did you say? And they're just like, what do they, you know, like.
And I never get that.
Yeah.
I never understood.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if it's the migration thing. I don't know, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me.
Okay. I was going to ask, did you ever experience that?
One time me and my friend, when we were in high school, we used to go to all the football games. Mm-hmm. We went to a football game. I forget what town it was in. So it was me, her. She's Puerto Rican, but she's dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. And it was her friend. He was Spanish, too. I think he was Puerto Rican also. And we went to Dunkin' Donuts, and we were in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
We were outside the car, though. We were in the driveway, and then this car pulled up. It was, like, four white American guys.
Yeah.
And they just started telling us off, like, calling us names and all this stuff. And we were just kind of confused as to why they were doing that.
Yeah.
We didn't look at them. We didn't do anything, mm-hmm. nothing. And we were kind of laughing at first, like, you look so stupid right now. But right. then they started getting even worse, like, calling us. I don't know. It was just bad. And it was, I had mm-hmm. never experienced something like that. And
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, I got aggravated, like, to the point where, like, you want to get physical, but then you're right. like, what's who are you?
It's and, not worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're so ignorant. But really, that was probably, like, the one time that I experienced it, like, to that extent or to right. that level where it was just, like, I can't believe people actually still, like, treat other people like this.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
What about, are people ever surprised when you say that you're Mexican?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Probably every time that when they ask me where I'm from.
Yeah, because you're in that to, I don't mean this in a mean way, because you're, like, white passing. Like, people think that you're white, right?
Or
something else
from Spain or yeah. Colombian or yeah.
Yeah, like, they're like, other. You're not.
Yeah.
They like have to look at it. Yeah.
You don't look like a Mexican.
You're like, what's a Mexican?
Like, what does Mexican look like? Yeah, like, yeah. I eat tacos every day. You
don't. Oh, man. That's unfortunate, Eric. I'm sorry that happened.
I know. That's okay. I mean,
you know. So your status up until DACA, which we're going to get heavily into, what was your status technically for those of you who are, or for those listeners who are not educated about what happens when you come here as a quote-unquote immigrant to you and your family?
Well, the way that I came in, a lot of people think that we, like, crossed the border, but that's not what happened at all.
You took a plane.
I took a plane, yeah.
Yeah.
I took a plane, and the thing was that we were on a visa for a year.
Oh, okay.
So after a year, you're supposed to go back. But, of course, that was not what my parents planned to do. That's not what, I don't know what was going on, but that's what happened. We just ended up staying.
I feel like that happens to a lot of people. They get a visa and then they just don't leave.
Right.
And there's just too many people to keep track of.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's exactly what happened with us or with me. So I guess that entire time I was just a mule. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But did you ever, and I learned this when I was friends with you, that you didn't have a social security card. You didn't have a license.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know until, like, high school. Well, so, not that I didn't know. I just wasn't aware that I didn't need it up until when everyone started getting their license in high school. And I'm just like, oh, wait, I can't.
Wow. So it didn't dawn on you until high school when people are driving that you're like, wait a minute, I'm illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't get these things.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Were you upset at your parents?
No, okay. not at all, because I know the reason why they came here.
Right.
And that was always in the back of my head. So mm-hmm. I think that's what has been pushing me throughout my entire time after I became aware of the fact that I didn't have my paperwork.
Yeah.
Just the fact that I know the reason why they're here, so that's what I'm going to do.
Right, right.
Know? So, but it was hard because everyone's getting their licenses, everyone's, like, taking the test, everyone's applying for college, and you're just like, what am I going to do? Like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Like, you just want to stop time.
Right, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And before that, you never had like a barrier, like did you have a job or did anything?
Yeah, my jobs were under the table though. Yeah,
wow, okay.
Like people I know that own restaurants and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I used to take care of my teacher's mother who was older. So everything okay. was under the table. I couldn't really, even though I didn't want to and it's against the law or whatnot, but right. it's like the only way that I could get money.
Right.
So.
What about your parents? Because I know they came here for a quote unquote, you know, better life for mm-hmm. you and your siblings. What did they do for work?
The same. It was all.
All under the table. And I mean, seeing from your home and how your lifestyle is, your family is successful, which yeah, is awesome.
We're good. My parents are really hardworking. My dad especially. I mean, not that my mom isn't, but my mom was always a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
She stayed home because she didn't want to kind of not give us 100% attention. Mm-hmm. My brothers, my sister. So my father, not that he wouldn't want her to work, but he would prefer for her to be home mm-hmm. with us, with our homework, with bringing us to practices if we needed to, or whatever we needed to do. So my dad was always like the breadwinner. Okay. He was always the one to bring home the money and mm-hmm. take care of the house, the bills, everything. But when my sister got a little bit older, my mom just decided that she wanted to do something for herself. So she started her own cleaning company.
Oh.
Yeah, and so now she has like 4 or 5 employees. So I'm just like so proud of her. Because
oh.
right from, you know, the beginning when yeah. she did start, she just was like, I just want to be my own boss.
That's
and
amazing.
She just did it. Yeah.
So
and my dad too.
So they each have their own business, so they yeah. both do the cleaning?
No, my dad does tiling.
Oh, tiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mom does the cleaning. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I'm so proud of them.
Oh. So this whole time, your parents were grinding and hustling and
yeah.
just trying to maintain for their family.
Like, I wouldn't see my dad. Like, my dad, I would, mm-hmm. he would leave when it was dark out, come back when it's dark out. Like, I wouldn't see him,
wow.
like, for, like, a long time. Because
right.
he was always working. But, I mean, I know he came here to do what he has to do for us, so.
Right, right. Yeah. Did you ever get, I read a book by Diane Carrero.
Mm-hmm.
She's an Orange and New Black. And she's Colombian. And she talks about how when she was in Boston, actually, her family was illegal. And she talks a lot about having anxiety. Like, they couldn't, they would be driving and they didn't want to do anything crazy to, like, cause attention
right.
to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to have a whole bunch of people over. They just were, like, so low-key
mm-hmm.
about their lifestyle. And she couldn't really do much. And then finally, somebody reported them. They got deported and she ended up staying in Boston, neglected. And was like homeless and all this crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that that's the same. That's your
yeah.
story. But did you guys have any anxiety that like somebody's going to report us or we can't do this, Erika, or you can't go here or you have to be careful?
Yeah, definitely when driving because you really shouldn't be driving without a license. But it was like,
yes.
what am I going to do? Stay home and not go to school and not go to work.
So you did have a car?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had a nice one too. So
it was oh, did you have white girl?
Huh?
You have white girl?
No, not this one.
Okay.
No. I had a little Jetta. But
I'm not calling
really
her
then.
A white girl. I'm calling her car a white girl.
No, not that one.
Okay.
But yeah, that just basically that. But
the driving like, piece for you.
Yeah, not
yeah.
mostly the other parts. No, just because I don't know. I think we were just so you grow into. It's the norm, so
right.
it's just like it doesn't really affect you as much, I guess, up until you get older and then you start realizing that if someone gets in trouble, like per se, if I got pulled over and where
yes.
do you live or your family and then everyone else gets involved, then
mm-hmm.
But I guess you don't really think about those things up until you get pulled over.
<It's just laughs> That's
like,
true.
Yeah.
So you were like a good student and kind of
yeah.
did everything that you were supposed to do
mm-hmm.
always because
yeah.
you know that's just your personality
yeah.
anyway. So then what happened when you started realizing people, you didn't have your papers and you needed to do something about it?
I freaked out. I freaked out because I was literally like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm
yeah.
not going to be able to keep going with school. Like, how am I going to work? I'm not going to be able to actually have a legit job.
Like a career, right?
Yeah, or a career. So then I went to Capital for 2 years. Capital Community College.
Still undocumented.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when I got there, they tried charging me as if I was an out-of-state student.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
First, they tried charging me as if I was out of the country, like, studying abroad. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But somehow, I'd like to be honest about everything, so that
yeah.
way, if anyone can help me out with the pricing or whatever,
So you told them, like, I don't have any papers?
I told them right off the bat. I was like, I don't have any paperwork, so am I able to come into your school or not?
Right.
So somehow I just got charged a normal, like, in state. I don't know how that happened, but I was like, hey, I'm taking it.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. But then when I finished there, I really wanted to go to Central. Mm-hmm. So that's when it became a little bit harder because they were really strict about the pricing. So they were like, either if you go full time, you're going to have to pay as though you were studying abroad. And that was like...
They didn't care about your status, but your status made a difference in terms of payment.
Right.
Okay. And your tuition. Okay.
It was either 3 or 4 times as much. Yeah.
And you couldn't apply for loans.
I couldn't apply for loans. You can't get a loan. You can't get a scholarship. You can't get anything.
Even though you were an amazing student, you can't get nothing. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they said either if you want to go full-time, then you have to pay as if you were... studying abroad, or you can do part-time, which would be 3 classes, but you have to pay as though you're an out-of-state student. So that's what I did. I was going to school part-time, and I was working 2 jobs to pay for school because I couldn't get any loans. I couldn't get anything.
Wow.
And my parents were just, like, you know, trying to make ends meet at home, so it was like, you have to go and work.
Mm-hmm.
So it hurt, like, to pay all that money. But at the same time, I'm so happy because, like, I have a lot of friends that took out loans, and now they're still paying them, and I'm like, whatever.
You don't have any debt, and you successfully got your bachelor's degree?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Probably that was, like, the hardest thing was making the money to pay for the classes that I was going.
Right.
So
then when did you start getting assistance, quote-unquote, or when did DACA? Yeah.
That was after I graduated, so, like, a year after I graduated. Almost a year,
Aren't you supposed to apply when you're a student?
Yeah, but that hadn't come into, like, place. Yeah.
It didn't start until Obama administration. Yeah. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. I have it in front of me. It was enacted in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And you graduated in 2011. Yeah. Okay, so where were you when you found out about DACA?
I don't even remember. I think my mom told me. She called me or something. I was at work, I think. And at first, I was a little bit... I don't know, skeptical about it. Not because it's not true, but I just, everything was always going the opposite for me where I felt like, no, this can't be real. Like, there's no way that I'm just going to be able to get, like, a real job.
Yeah.
Like, a legitimate job.
Because you were still working under the table at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So then finally, and I think I was just scared at the fact that I didn't know if people were going to see that different, so I was scared to apply. And then one day I was like, let me just apply my friend worked at Santander Bank, which was previously Sovereign.
Yeah.
She was like, just apply, see what happens. So I applied and I got an interview. I got hired as a supervisor and that was it.
Wait a minute.
I've been banking ever since. Exactly.
So you applied for,
I applied for a part-time teller.
At Santander, but this is before or after DACA?
Right after, like when I got my paperwork for it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you got DACA.
Yeah.
Now, how was the application process? Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's long. It's really long. It's hard. It's really intricate. Yeah. So, honestly, the reason why it took me a while to even apply for a job was because the person that was helping us or helping me with the process, for some reason, everything was taking super long. So, it was a year after and I still hadn't received anything as far as, like, going to get your fingerprints or I hadn't received anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, come to find out, he actually never sent the paperwork.
You know what, E? This is not the first time I've heard this.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that people try to work with a lawyer or other people to assist them, and they give them a whole bunch of money to do the paperwork to speed it up, and they don't do it. They take people's money. Mm-hmm. So
previous to that, my parents did try fixing all our paperwork through someone else, and they paid, like, a lot of money for it, but nothing ever came.
And just to be clear, only you can apply for DACA because you're the child that came here with the parents, right? So mm-hmm. your parents don't qualify, it's just you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And you have to be a student and either working or planning to work.
Okay.
So
it took over a year for you to find out whether you were accepted into the program.
Right. After that, when I went to the second person, it literally took like maybe 2 to 3 weeks to receive the first letter telling me that I had a date set for my fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so happy because I was like, okay, now things is going. It's not that long. It doesn't take that long as it seemed with the other guy.
And fingerprints are for criminal history?
Yeah, for... Yeah,
okay, to see if... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Then after that, that's when I started applying for the jobs. And I got it. I got the bank job and then that's I've been banking ever since.
That's so amazing.
I know. It was so cool, right?
That is really cool. No, the fact that you had all these barriers and then you stepped up to where you are now, that's amazing.
Yeah. I just feel like at the time it was hard, it was difficult, but I feel like all the barriers never like were enough to stop
to deter
me from,
you.
From doing what my parents came here to do. So it was just like, no. This is what I'm gonna do regardless of what you throw at me. It's just gonna, and a lot of people were like,
that.
Oh my god, you finished school, that's I'm so proud of you and all this stuff, you know,
and like, you're like
stuff. And I'm just like, thanks, like that's what I was meant to be, like that's what I was meant to do. So
right, so there was no other I don't have any other options, or I'm sad about my situation, and
No, it's just like you deal with it and you just do it and you keep going. And then if it didn't work out at the end, then it wouldn't work out, but it did. So
right. I think your story is unique. I think that's why people are like, oh my god, you finished school, because the stories that you hear and the stuff that you read about are about people who allow their status and stuff to take over them. They have fear, they have anxiety, they're hopeless. And they don't know where to turn. Yeah. So I think the fact that you are able to rise above means a lot.
It does. Yeah, it does. It does to me, at least. And I know to my parents it does.
So at this point, you're thriving, right? You're working at a bank and you have DACA. Where are your parents? What was their status? Their status did not change.
Their status hadn't changed, no. Oh. But then finally my mom was able to get her stuff too, so that's how they were able to like open up the businesses and stuff. So
they both ended up getting their citizenship? Mm-hmm. Did you go with them?
No.
Okay. No, because my mom went through the same thing. She had to take the test, and then they like get like inducted and stuff at the city hall, and I went with her, and I was in high school.
Your mom?
Yeah.
Wait, where's your mom from?
Dominican Republic. And she like took the test, did everything. It's like, it's really vague, but I remember the first election she was able to vote at was for Obama.
So she was
excited. Yeah. That's amazing. So yeah, that makes sense. They were able to open the business after that. Mm-hmm. This might seem like a silly question, but did your life significantly change when DACA started and you were able to get this new job?
Oh yeah, for sure. It was, it felt like there was a piece missing before that. And then this was the piece that I needed just to kind of just go over to like what my normal life was supposed to be like.
Right.
So now I just feel like because of that, I just get hungrier. I just want to do better. I just want to be better. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be in the same job for too long.
Right.
So I just
want to keep going up
the
ladder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I know that DACA allows for people to relief from deportation and work authorizations. But does it mean that now you can do other things like get a passport? Do you have a social security card? Like those things too?
Yeah, you get a social security card, but not the passport.
Not the passport.
Yeah.
Because you're not a citizen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Mexico passport?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can't travel with that?
No.
Out of the U.S.?
No. Well, you can travel out, but you can't travel back in.
So you haven't gone to Mexico? Oh. I'm like, I'll marry you. So, okay, so you have a Mexico passport, a security card, and you can travel to Mexico, but you can't come back. Mm-hmm. Is that why you haven't gone?
Yeah, that's exactly why. Otherwise, I'd be there, like, every other week.
Oh, my God, E! Man, yeah. I thought we were going to Mexico this
year. You should. I mean, I got family where I could just stay.
Oh, man, okay. So, then, so with DACA, you have to reapply every 2 years?
Right.
Okay. So how was that process?
6 months in advance. Or okay. 4 to 6 months in advance you have to do it.
So officially you've had it since 2013, 14?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now we're in 2018. What happened for you in your mind when you found out that Trump in September of 2017, he announced that he was going to take away DACA?
I honestly was like, dumbfounded. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my god, what am I going to, now I'm back to like square one again.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like it didn't feel as bad as when I felt before I even got DACA. I just feel like, I don't know, I just feel like it's whatever comes my way is like what you have to deal with. So
right.
I was like, either way, one way or another, I'm going to make sure that I'm able to provide for myself and do whatever I need to do to either maintain what I have or even better, you know? So it was never, like, a set thing in my mind. I don't want to worry about it until, like, actually, if it happens or, what, you know, like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Like, no, I think it's okay. I think it's okay to not know what to do because I don't think people know what to do. He said that it was going to, he was going to scrape it in September. Right. He got a whole bunch of backlash. So the Congress is like, okay, we'll figure something else out. There's a whole bunch of conflicting information on the internet talking about, like, there's no new applications, but you guys are good. But they're saying, like, you know, until, like, March 2020, you won't be, like, a dreamer anymore. So it's, there's a lot of anxiety, at least from what I'm reading online from people who are dreamers, right? Because that's where you guys are considered. Because it's, like, he said he was going to take it away in March so nobody can apply. But then it's, like, what's going to happen after March 2020?
Right, yeah. We have no clue. To be determined.
To be determined. Not to give you anxiety.
No, thanks.
No, but I, it's a real...
It's a real issue. And a lot of people, I feel like they don't understand what it is to actually be able to do what you want as far as your education and your job that you want. Like, you can literally do whatever you want, literally. And there's some people that can't, you know what I mean? Or that couldn't. Back then, I couldn't, and I might not be able to in 2020, but everyone that was born here or that has their citizenship, like, you can literally do whatever you want.
Right.
I don't know, it's crazy.
No, I think that's a good point. People who are citizens should be really, really grateful because they can do whatever you want. And it's, for a lot of people who still feel oppressed because of the color of their skin and stuff like that, we still, we need to recognize that maybe we have, we still have privilege at, at some point because... Yeah. We're not, if you're not an immigrant and you don't have to worry about DACA, then you can, you don't have to worry about your work visa, your work abilities are going to be taken away and your social security card and you're going to be deported.
Yeah.
When you, hear about all the things on the news about people being deported, do you ever, do you watch the news first of all?
Once in a while.
Okay. Do you hear about that stuff?
I do. All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's scary because it, it takes a toll on your entire family. It's just not the person, you know, it's like the kids or the wife or the husband. And it's just, it might be someone that's doing, I mean,
amazing work.
Exactly. And they're just trying to make a life better than what they had back at home or better than what they had growing up. And it's just like, that's all we're trying to do is just live life a little bit more free or less in depth than, back at home. And it's usually, you know, I mean, I guess sometimes when there's people that have committed crimes, then that's a different story. Like,
right.
You know, because now you're coming into another country and you're causing all these problems. So you probably shouldn't do all those things that, you know, are going to call attention, the wrong attention towards you. But there's like, honestly, like, I don't know. I know when I say innocent, I know a lot of people are like, well, you're breaking the law being here legally. So
I know, but what law? I mean, I don't I don't know all the laws, but I'm just like, okay, but what law? Because they're saying, you know, the Constitution and other things that are out there that we had to sing, maybe not Constitution, but the Pledge of Allegiance and things we had to learn in school are saying that we're a melting pot and that we are free people, we accept everyone, and but that's not the case when someone is saying that they're trying to build a wall.
Exactly. Right.
it's hard, and I'm so glad that you still have like a happy, positive spirit because I don't know a lot of there actually when I it's funny because when I think when I started the podcast, didn't I text you like, are you a DACA recipient? Yeah, like randomly?
I was cooking actually, and I was like, what in the world? Yeah, I was like, what? But we hadn't known each other for that long either, and that conversation never came up. So I was like, oh yeah, I don't think she knows.
Well, you and you, I think it's important to ask your friends and have those conversations. No, not even. Are you a DACA recipient? Are you a dreamer? Just a
group text.
Right. Who's a dreamer? Yeah. Please check in. No, but it was like, I had known you, and I think our friend Catherine said something about, like, girl, you didn't have a license. And I was like, why?
Yeah. What do you mean?
And then I started learning, like, little and little about you, about the fact that you didn't have all the stuff that a regular American has, quote unquote. And then one day I'm just like, are you a DACA recipient? I'm like, yeah. I was like, oh no, are they going to take her away? And I had to do my own research because if you don't, it's scary to think that you're seeing lots of people being deported, and I'm just like, hi, Erica, are you home? Like, and not like, and I don't mean to laugh, but right. It's like, I'm laughing because it's sad.
It is. It's insane that that actually can happen.
Right.
Right?
Oh my God. I'm getting like teary-eyed.
Stop. No, I'm a crybaby.
How has it affected, I know it has affected you, but your parents, do they talk about DACA and what's going on with Trump? Do you guys have political conversations?
They do. Yeah, they do all the time, especially my father and my mom, because he comes home from work and that's the first thing he does is turns on the news.
Aww.
So he'll be like, Erica, come watch this. And I mean, I watch it, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and have an anxiety attack over something that hasn't happened yet. But right. At the same time, I guess I should be a little bit more preventative and try to figure out a plan as of what I'm going to do.
I was just going to ask you, do you have a plan B?
No. I don't even know what a plan B would look like other than the fact that you're just going to go back to working under the table and then...
Right, but then I feel like if you take away DACA, people can't renew their application, so then they stay in the country. But then I think he would take it up a notch and say, those dreamers are going to get deported, which I feel like that costs us money as
right.
taxpayers. Exactly. That's a lot of people.
It is. And I have no idea how he's going to be able to get all of us out. I'm sorry, just within me and my family, there's like about 500 people in Connecticut. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my God. I'm like, I mean, you guys go deep.
I just imagine how many people that would be, how much money that would take to actually get everyone out.
The latest number I saw is 16,000 dreamers lost their work permits, but 800,000 dreamers live and work in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's more than that.
Right. Same. There's a lot. There is a lot.
There's
and
a
that's
lot.
Just dreamers. Never mind maybe the parents that haven't been able to get the paperwork or, you know right. what I mean? Because there's a cutoff age. Also for the dreamer, so
31.
Mm-hmm. So for all the people that came here after the fact, there's a lot of more people than the dreamers that are here. You know what I mean? So I don't know how he's gonna be.
Right, because it only applies to you if you came here as a child,
mm-hmm.
and your parents like brought you here. Which they're saying a lot of people's argument is like, don't punish a child; it wasn't their fault. You know that right. kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then if you're an adult, you can't really apply for DACA, maybe.
Right. Mm-mm. You can't.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a cousin that was like right on the cusp, so she wasn't able to apply for that.
So what's
she
doing?
Like a year. I think she actually already got her citizenship because she married someone. I mean, she married her boyfriend who was a citizen. So
okay.
Yeah, so she's good. But it's just scary because a lot of people are like, oh, why don't you just marry someone? And I'm like,
I was going to say, do you feel pressure?
Not at all. I don't. Yeah, and I will. I feel like I will never make marriage It's not my thing. Like, I really mm-hmm. want to be married because I want to get married and because I only want to be married once. And
right.
I don't think I
would. Not for papers?
No. Even though there's a lot of people that do it for papers. A lot.
I know one person who got married because of papers, and luckily that marriage is still thriving and beautiful and stuff like that. And they have another family member, and she can't, like, go to school. She can't travel. Like, we talk about mm-hmm. girls' trips and stuff like that in the past. And she's like, I can't go. And I'm like, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case with you? You can't go out of the country?
Mm-mm.
No.
Oh, you can go out of the country if there's, like, a medical emergency with one of your family members.
Okay.
Or if it's through work or school.
But then it's going to be a hassle coming back, right?
I don't think it's a hassle. Okay. I mean, it might be a little bit difficult, but it's not.
It's not as bad.
Yeah, it's not impossible. But you need like certified letters or whatnot from your job or school or the doctor.
At least you can go to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Have you gone?
I have. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. That's good. So right now you currently don't have a plan B, which is okay.
I mean, what else? Whether it's okay or not, it's not present. So.
Right. Right. What do you feel like your future looks like? Or what do you want your future to look like? That's a better question.
I feel like my future, to me, in my mind, still looks like how I've been seeing it for a while. I don't... All of those things that might be coming my way, they're not registering in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to keep doing what I want to do and making sure that I move up in my job and try to make the best of it and... I mean, if the time comes where I can't do it anymore, then I'll figure it out. But for right now, I'm not I'm not allowing anything to kind of interfere with what I want to be and who I want to become.
What kind of, just so listeners know, what kind of position do you hold at the bank?
I'm a relationship manager for Bank of America.
And so do you hope to, is there upward mobility at Bank of America? Can you move up from that?
I can. Yeah, okay, definitely. Good. And that's what I'm working on right now.
Good.
So hopefully I'll be able to do that before my papers get taken away.
Stop!
I'm kidding. They're not.
It's fine. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's the reality.
Yeah.
What about school? Do you have any aspirations to go back to school or you're done with schooling?
I think I'm done with schooling.
Okay.
Not because I dislike school or... I just feel like jobs nowadays take more of like a networking
kind of skill.
Yeah, and who you know. So not that school is a waste of time. I don't think it's a waste of time at all. But at the same time, I feel like you can get to where you want to be without... Well, depending on what you're going after too.
I think since you started off your career already in banking and the fact that you've been able to move up so quickly, I think school in your case might maybe taking like a workshop here or something like that, like a certificate for your job. But maybe going back to school may not make sense.
No.
Because then that's going to take away from your money that you're making.
Yeah. I just want my license in so I can be able to do maybe like more like investment type of work. So,
do you have any barriers to get your license?
No. Okay. I just have to basically apply and
and
try to get all of that stuff. So, and the bank pays for it, so that's a good part.
That's amazing. Finally. I mean, right, hello.
You can get a scholarship, but you can pay for my licenses.
I know. Yeah. It's amazing. Other than traveling outside of the country, are there any other barriers for you to like live your life and do the things that you want to do? Because of your status and stuff?
Not really. Other than that, I mean, the DACA's been, it's given me, like, it's just, like, a leeway of me being able to be, like, I said, like, a normal human being. Like, you know, like, live here like a normal human being. So I can, I have my car, finally, that I can register under my name with my own credit.
Yeah.
I'm looking to buy a house. It's just, like, I can do everything normally. Right. Other than the traveling part.
And you can't apply for citizenship?
I can, but it's, the process, like I said, when my parents tried to do everything, it's, like, just as hard. And I don't know, I think it's probably because there's so many people from Mexico that try to get it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've spoken to people from other nationalities, and they get it so quick. There's no questions asked, but I'm not sure if it's because there's so, like, a large population of Mexicans here.
Right.
It would be insane to give all of them
citizenship, you know, yeah. Right. Do you think if you applied, would you be scared to apply now because of the political climate and everything that's going on?
I probably wouldn't be scared to apply because of that. I'd probably be more scared to apply and get denied.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would probably be the scarier part.
Well, it looks like we're getting married tomorrow.
I got a white dress.
Oh, nice. I have a black tux.
You do it for today's wedding.
Yes. Well, I really, really hope that there's something that is resolved, because I think the problem with DACA, I mean, there's a lot of, not the problem with DACA, but with the problem with Congress and what's going on with the Trump administration is that they're not being truthful about what they want to do.
Right.
So they keep scaring people. Mm-hmm. They said in March 2018, which is right now, that they were going to take it away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, the deadline came and went. I think the deadline was like March 5th or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. You're having people sit around and have anxiety and fear, not maybe not you, but other people that I read about on the internet. So I think that they need to do a better job of reassuring people who have contributed to this country, who've worked and went to school and pay taxes and pay taxes that they deserve to be here. And why I take away a program is not affecting him.
Right. Exactly.
I don't understand.
It's just really basically just giving us a way to be and do things legally. Because they're going to get done regardless.
Exactly.
Yeah, people are going to work regardless. They have to feed their family, so...
And clearly you can go to school without having the papers because...
Right. You just have to pay.
Right.
Double or triple.
So it's right. It's giving people a little bit of help because it's... You're still going to school, you're still working, and maybe you're not applying... You're not... You don't have taxes, so you don't get money back, and you're not paying for in-state tuition. Like, those little things that can help someone.
Yeah.
So they can buy a house and invest.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's important, and I hope that you don't go anywhere.
I won't. Trust me. Okay, if I do, you come in to visit.
Yes. I'm coming to visit, and I hope that whatever happens, that people, that there's just like a resolution that's just best for everyone. Yeah,
me too. Same. I hope for everyone. Because I know, even though I might not be as anxious right now, I know I will be. Mm-hmm. And I know there's mothers and fathers out there that are probably very, very anxious for their kids, you know, mm-hmm. to see like what's going to happen. And I don't know, hoping that they'll be able to stay and keep their jobs and keep moving forward, which is really what I'm sure every person that has come mm-hmm. from Mexico to here is trying to do, is just have their right. kids be able to live a better childhood and a better life than they did. That's right. all that people are trying to do.
What keeps you, I'm just like so amazed at how like positive and like you just have this presence about you. What is it, what keeps you so like happy and positive and focused on what you're doing and your family and their future, and not thinking about what's going on with DACA and what the future might be?
I just feel like you're not promised a tomorrow, so
yeah,
I've worried so much before. Why am I gonna worry today about what hasn't happened yet or what might happen tomorrow? And I don't know if that's a bad thing, because I'm just kind of like living like freely. But I'm just really trying to,
as you should.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be good. I'm just I just want to be happy, and I know that's what my parents want most, and that mm-hmm. all I want is for my parents to get what they want. Yeah. So that, you know, as long as I'm happy, I know they're happy, regardless of where I work or what I do, for work. That they're happy if I'm happy, and that's all right. that matters to me. And I just want to be a good role model for my sister, for my brothers, and then I'm gonna cry.
It's okay. And you're the oldest, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. What keeps you grounded? I feel like you probably already answered that, but what keeps you grounded?
My family.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, they're sweet.
They are. Yeah. I haven't met them, but they seem sweet. Right?
I saw your sister in here. No, that's amazing. And again, thank you so much, E.
No worries.
And I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions to end our interview, because I think that we gave the listeners a really good look into your life, mm-hmm. and I think that it's going to be important for us to, I mean, I think one message that you gave all of us is that tomorrow's not promised.
Right.
It doesn't matter what your status is, and, mm-hmm. you know, people are, things happen in this world, and we live in really crazy times, mm-hmm. and you just have to live every life, like, live every day like it's your last.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's a hard transition.
It is.
So I'll start with a good question. So what do you do for self-care?
I work out. I sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I try to read.
Nice.
As often as I can, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's it.
What are you reading right now? Are you reading anything?
I just recently read Rich Woman.
Ooh, is
yeah.
that good?
I love it, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I have it, actually. Right. I'm going to give it to you.
Oh, perfect. Because I need all the gems. I need Poor Woman, the book.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. What is your morning routine like? So you have, you're getting ready for the day. What is it that you do to get yourself started?
Nothing special.
That's okay.
I literally get up, and probably the most important part of my morning is make sure that I have my protein shake.
That's good. So you don't have, there's nothing special that you do other than a protein shake?
The protein shake. And probably, because I work so far from home, it's not that far, it's like 30 minutes, but okay. I feel like I get that 30 minutes just to myself. In the car with myself. So I either sometimes listen to music, sometimes I'll listen to maybe some type of inspirational speaker. So that's a really, although I complain about the drive all the time. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes that's necessary.
Yes.
Just to have like peace and quiet. Sometimes just you
decompress. By yourself.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That's awesome. What about your night routine? You have a really stressful job at night when you're trying to, unwind and get yourself ready for bed. What do you do?
Usually just take a shower and drink tea.
That's awesome. I didn't know you drink tea.
Yeah, love tea.
Oh, that's awesome. And last question, what made you the happiest this week?
My boyfriend got me an air fryer.
I saw your air fryer. Oh my God, I'm so jealous. You have to invite me over so I can have some of whatever you're going to make in the air fryer. Thank you so much, E, again, for sitting in for the Basic Latina podcast.
Of course.
I feel like for everything that we're hearing about DACA, you hear me? DACA. DACA. It is important to hear personal stories, and there's plenty of personal stories for people who are wondering more about DACA. And I thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Basic Latina podcast. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud and YouTube at Basic Latina Podcast. And we also have a Facebook and Instagram, which is Basic Latina Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more from any of our guests, the inbox is open. And I'm hoping that you guys will write in some of your comments, questions, or suggestions so I can answer them on the show. The email is BasicLatinaPodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, make sure you do that, because the more ratings and reviews that we get, the more visibility we get. And visibility is really important. I cannot end this show without thanking my team. Sound editing is by Gabby Barnes, and the music is by Michael Guns. I'll talk to you guys soon. Stay well and take care.